Blog Talk Radio.
I don't. Good evening. Welcome. Come on in to Eerie House and hang around with us for a while. This is Dale Kay from Spook Show here along with
Double Married Dave Binkley from The Weirdness, Really Bad Movie.
That's right. And the second time around is always better. Well, it worked that way for me and Dave.
Yes, it did.
So we've got more stories about Pride.
Yep, statistically, we're in the safest category where both, I don't know about Denise, if Denise was in a second marriage or not, but generally if it's a second marriage for both, it's statistically the safest marriage.
Safe from what?
from the next divorce.
Yes. Because we learned how much the first one cost. No, I'm kidding. Just a joke. Just a joke. No, we got lucky the second time around. You know, my first marriage didn't last long. No kids, thankfully. And moved right along. But now, 31 years later, I'm still with wife number two. And as you like to call the first wife, the practice wife. I love that
line. That's the practice wife.
And the practice marriage.
Because the practice did make pretty darn good second time around.
Yep. Lots of folks, come visit us here in the chat live, listening live. Ed Reconora, Fogsbane, and GGSI Paper, welcome. Plus all of those of you we can't see, like people who aren't logged in, or if you're listening later in the archives. We got more stories about brides and some cool radio shows, Mystery Theater. We haven't had them in a while.
You missed one of the guests there, Dale.
Oh, Gar the Ghoul. He's not a guest. He's a fixture. He belongs here. And the only reason you're not hearing him is because he's priming himself up for Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul later on this evening at around 8 o'clock after we're done here.
That's right. We'll move over there to watch our good buddy Gar as he takes over and entertains us all for the evening. I've said that many times, how a full stinking 4 hours that guy usually goes on. Just bringing on entertainment and movie and free feature and all that great stuff. And so it's just absolutely amazing that he does it. He's got an outline, but no script. Here you go. And interaction with his viewers, it's wonderful. More bride stories tonight. Absolutely.
Yeah. So we haven't had Mole Mystery Theater in a while.
No, it's funny because as long as it was on, very few of the actual straight Mole Mystery Theater survive. There are quite a few, though. Probably about half of them that have survived beyond that were because they became part of the Armed Forces Mystery Playhouse, which means they kind of snuck their own opening on. Then the whole show was the Mole Mystery Theater, but the opening was and closing was done by the Armed Forces Radio, either hosted by Peter Lorre, and it was Howard Duff, and it was Elliot Lewis. Those were the three that were kind of the host of Mystery Playhouse there. So.
Just think, if it wasn't for World War II, how many of these shows we wouldn't have? Thank you, Nazis.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but not only that, but really that contributed to the golden age of radio because all of our resources that were going towards television were halted for the war effort. So radio really had a chance to thrive. Had it not been for World War II, radio probably would have been done for at least 5 years before it was. That's what gave us, because so many of these that we play here are between 1945 and say 53. That's probably a bulk of the programs that we play here. And probably the ones in 53 wouldn't have even been there had it not been for transferring all that resources to the World War II efforts there.
Amen. And we also got Michael Shane tonight.
Yeah, another great little Jeff Chandler. You know, Jeff Chandler made a lot of radio. He did several suspenses. Of course, he starred in this. And he also was the shy biologist, Mr. Boynton, on Our Miss Brooks on radio. When it went to television, he wanted to go along, but he was still contractually obligated to one of the movie studios, and they wouldn't let him take that to television. So for whatever reason, they just didn't. Well, television takes up a lot more time than radio does. I guess that's
it. It does, and it's kind of a shame because he made that character really work well on radio. Would have been kind of interesting to see him in the TV version, but
it would have been, yeah.
And at the time, he was quite the ladies' man. I mean, a lot of gals were mooning over Jeff Chandler. I remember even into the '60s, young ladies were mooning over him.
Yeah, he had one of those forever tans, you know. Who was it that has that? I forget the guy with it.
Alexander George.
George Hamilton. Yeah, yeah, George Hamilton.
George Hamilton.
Yeah. Yes. He's got that forever. Well, that's kind of what Jeff Chandler did. That's why in one movie they made him an Indian. Yep.
Yeah, one of his best roles, actually.
Yeah, and you know, he never quite hit the movie stardom because of his looks and his delivery. I think the studios thought that he would really just be a major, major movie star. But I don't think he ever hit the heights that they expected him to go. But he certainly was a tremendous actor, and it worked out for him well on here, especially in Michael Shane. They were great scripts. They always had a, kind of a surprise ending, and he kind of was the almost not really dumb, but kind of a just about average intelligence for a private investigator. But he had resources. He had and he had a thick skull, which got crushed in several times a week usually.
That's great. Because some of your detectives are like extremely sharp. Like Johnny Dollar or whatever.
Yeah.
But Michael Shane is just a tough, resourceful, never give up kind of guy.
He's one of your classic tough noir type guys. And there's nothing wrong with that. But that's why when Johnny Dollar came along, and his was more about he was tough, but his was about intelligence as well. That's mm-hmm. why I think he stands out, and when he started off, he really was more just of the tough guy noir type thing. It wasn't until they brought in Bob Bailey to become him that it really changed the whole dimension of Johnny Dollar.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why most of us endear Bob Bailey as a regular favorite, I think, playing the
yes.
role.
Absolutely.
We're doing Brides today. We're finishing up after some really good shows last night, Weird Circle, Shadow, and Suspense.
Mm-hmm.
This one's called The Bride Wore Black from Mole Mystery
yeah.
Theater.
Another interesting from the Mole, it was a shaving cream, I think it was.
Yes.
The show is sponsored by Sterling Drugs, manufacturer of Mole. Nah, it wasn't just shaving cream. It was Mole brushless shaving cream. And,
ooh.
Because,
remember
back then, there was most of the shaving creams, you put them in that little thing and you mixed it up with the water and you used your brush there to get it all
yeah,
mixed up.
Yeah, you had a shaving mug. You had a shaving
right,
mug.
Right. And,
my father had one.
I don't know that my dad, my dad now he doesn't bother with it at all. He's got the he's got this long beard, so he doesn't mess with it now. But he always used it out of a can, from my knowledge of it. Now he may have had it before, but yeah.
No, I don't think my father used canned shaving cream till the '70s. But I remember when being real little, he had a shaving mug with the old fashioned, you know, razor with the blade, replaceable blades.
With that single blade, yeah.
That wow. single blade that rip half your face off. You know?
It did.
But yep, by God, it got yep. the hair too, and three layers of skin.
Three layers of skin. That's right.
That's Keep right.
From growing back for another couple of days, yeah. The skin, not the hair.
Car reports, nostalgia. Has those shaving mugs still out there for purchase yet?
Yeah, for, wow.
For masochists.
hopefully more will show them for use, but yeah.
I wouldn't mind trying a straight razor for a while. That's got to be a skill, to shave with a straight razor.
I think that would be a skill. That's why so many guys, when they got a good shave, they actually went to the barber shop.
The barber shop, yep. Get the old-fashioned shave. And they come out looking as beautiful as a bride. So,
shave and a haircut, two bits.
Yep.
Yep.
And we're ready to go with part one of our first story.
Gar's right. If you want a challenge, try a crooked razor.
That's right. Wielded by a crooked barber. But the Bride Wore Black, Moly Mystery Theater from?
February 7th, 1947.
And now the Moly Mystery Theater, presented by MOLLE. Moly, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers and a tender skin.
Wonderful, Nick. So, so beautiful. I'm going to make you happy, Nick. Really happy. I'm going to be a good wife, darling.
Nick! What's the matter? Nick, what's happened? Oh, no! Nick!
Good evening. This is Jeffrey Barnes, welcoming you to the Mole Mystery Theater, the program that presents the best in mystery and detective fiction. You've just heard the opening scene of tonight's story by Cornell Woolridge, starring Miss June Havoc, and bearing the rather unusual and bizarre title, The Bride Wore Black. After all, black is the color we associate with death and funerals, not with weddings and romance. But tonight, black is the color of a woman's revenge.
Well, gee, Mr. Barnes, you know, some men could cope with such a dangerous woman, and yet, strangely enough, be worried stiff when it comes to shaving tough whiskers or a tender skin. Well, men, we don't blame you. All we say is, try Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream. Yes, sir, it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin. Mole. Now for tonight's Mole Mystery presentation, The Bride Wore Black.
In the library of a suburban estate not far from New York City, a young and beautiful woman, her red hair drawn into a prim knot, sits typing. She does not look up as a tall, heavily built man enters the room and approaches her softly.
Almost finished the manuscript?
What? Oh, Mr. Holmes, I didn't hear you come in.
I asked. You almost done?
Well, not quite, Mr. Holmes. I still have a few more pages.
Well, let it go for now. I'd like to talk to you.
Talk?
Yes, a rather long talk. So why don't you take my armchair?
Oh, no, I couldn't, thank you.
I insist. I want you to sit there.
But I
insist on it.
Well, where will you sit?
I'll take your chair. Now, if you don't mind. There. Isn't that more comfortable?
I suppose so.
Now, just to make things a little cozier, suppose I put a little more wood on the fire.
Oh, no, it's too warm in here already.
Warm? I feel a chill. There's these two logs. Ah, look at them catch fire. Now, suppose I just turn on this recording machine.
Why, what for?
I want this little talk of ours recorded. You see, there's something I want to clear up between us.
Something you want to clear up?
Yes, Mrs. Killeen.
Mrs. Killeen?
Oh, I know that's not the name you gave me when you came to work as my secretary.
But it isn't my name.
I happen to know better. But let's not get off on any tangents. We both know who you are.
What on earth are you...
The one thing I don't know yet, the thing I'd like you to tell me now, is just how and when you intended to murder me.
Murder you? What? Oh, you're joking. Why should I want to kill you?
I think that'll come out in our talk, Mrs. Killeen.
Well, I don't...
No, sit right where you are. You're not going to get up out of that chair.
Well, you can't keep me here.
Yes, I can, and I will. Suppose you just listen to me, without interruptions.
But you have no
right... Without interruptions. I don't flatter myself I wouldn't be the first man you murdered.
Oh, nonsense.
No, as a matter of fact, I was to be the last. But I want to go back to the first man, Ken Bliss. Bliss was at a party given in the penthouse of a friend of his named Corey when he noticed you. Hey, Corey, come here a minute, will you? Come here.
What do you want, Ken?
Want to ask you something.
Uh-huh.
Who's that blonde dish over there in the corner, huh?
Oh, which one?
The one in the black net dress.
Oh, yeah. Wonder what she's doing here.
Well, let's go over and find out. Well, come on, what are you waiting for, huh? Well, pardon me.
Yes?
I brought our host over to introduce us to one another. Well, go on, Corey. Start hosting.
I'm not sure I remember the young lady's name.
Why, of course you do. It's Nora.
Nora? You sure?
Of course I am.
Oh, of course. Maybe I got you mixed up with someone else.
Uh-huh. Perhaps you have.
Perhaps. I don't know.
What is all this? I'm Ken Bliss.
How do you do?
Come on, Nora. Come out on the terrace.
Well, huh?
I'll show you the city. All lit up.
All right.
Beautiful terrace. Beautiful terrace. Don't know how Corey can afford it, but there have been rumors.
Shut up, Ken.
Okay, Corey. Hey, coming, Nora?
Yes.
I'll come along.
Ah, you got your guest.
I'll come along.
Ooh, chilly out here. Could you bring me my raft?
Attaboy, Corey.
Would you, Mr. Corey?
Okay. I'll get your coat. Which one is it?
It's a blonde mink. Initials NR.
Right. I'll be back.
Don't seem so chilly out here to me.
It isn't. It's just that I wanted to talk to you, Mr. Bliss, alone.
Oh?
About something important.
Important? What's important?
You. Some things about you.
Yeah? What about me?
Oh, about the time we met once before.
We met? And I forgot.
Well, we didn't exactly meet. You saw me
and forgot you? Oh, no. Impossible.
You were in a car with three other men.
That could be 100 times.
But this time, the car's license number was D3827, remember?
No. I got a rotten head for figures. Besides, what's the difference? We're here and now.
This car was...
Forget the car.
It was kept in a garage up on Exterior Avenue in the Bronx, and they left it there. They never called for it again. But I traced it. I found out who was in it.
Look, who's interested in some car? I mean, a beautiful girl, and all she gives me is a routine about a car. Oh, no. Come here.
Well.
Now, let's just stay interested in us. You and me. And what's the matter?
My scarf. You knocked it off my shoulder.
You weren't wearing any scarf.
It flew over the railing.
You sure?
There it is. It's caught on something right down there. Well... Maybe I can reach it.
No, I'll do it here. Look out, let me. Now, where's the thing, huh?
Right there. Don't you see it? Watch out. Don't lean over too far.
Oh, boy, it makes me dizzy. I don't see your scarf.
Right below you. A little further. A little more.
Hey, what you doing?
Getting even for Nick Killeen.
Huh?
No.
No, don't! No!
Thank you.
When Corey came back, after searching for your non-existent coat, Mrs. Killeen, you were gone. You had killed your first man.
Don't
get up. Sit there, right there. We still have a good deal to talk about. About Joe Mitchell, for instance. He lived in a cheap hotel on the west side, lived a cheap, drab life, until that evening that he came back to the lobby.
Hello, Mr. Mitchell. Want your key?
Yeah, Tom. Oh, mail for me?
Yes, sir.
Let's see what we've got here. Advertisement. Here, you want to buy a custom-tailored suit?
No, thanks. I couldn't afford it.
Huh. Neither can I right now. Hey, you sure this one is for me?
Mm. Your name's on the envelope, isn't it?
Yeah, but a theater ticket. Elgin Theater, Box A. 480 seat, and for tonight. Why should anyone send this to me?
I don't know, Mr. Mitchell. Were you ever connected with this theater?
Well, I used to tend bar where a lot of actors hung out. Maybe that's it. Maybe somebody remembered me. Well, it's a break. I might as well go. After all, what can I lose?
Hey, Tom, is that Mr. Mitchell?
Yeah, he's right here.
I got a call for him.
Oh, okay. You can take it here, Mr. Mitchell. Hello?
Joe? It's me, Maybell.
Yeah? What do you want?
Well, what are you snapping for?
I'm not feeling so good.
It sounds all right.
Well, I don't feel good. Listen, I gotta hurry. Call me tomorrow, or I'll call you.
Well, you're going in such a hurry. I thought you said you're sick.
I am. I'm going to bed. I'm sorry about our date.
Don't be foolish, Joe. That's all right. I tell you what. I'll bring over some chicken soup.
No.
Yeah, some nice warm chicken soup from the restaurant. The cook will give it to me.
No, I told you. Look, I gotta hang up. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, but Joey...
Chicken soup.
Excuse me. Do you mind if I take this seat?
Why, no, not at all. Plenty of room. Oh, you're just in time. They're dimming the light.
I want to come too early.
Tell me, someone sent you a ticket, too?
No, this is my box. But I must confess, I sent you your ticket.
You sent
me? Yes, I wanted to see you again.
Again? But I never saw
you. We can't talk here. I want to be alone with you.
Yeah, but the show's about... Well, why don't we go over to my place? It's a hotel, but it's respectable, sort of.
Well, I wouldn't want to be seen going to your room.
Oh, I understand. Well, we can go up the stairs. It's only the third floor, and no one will notice us. What do you say?
All right. That will be as good a place as any. Well, I can see by all the girls' pictures on the walls that you're really a ladies' man, aren't you?
Oh, those? No, they don't mean a thing. You know, I've always been looking for something, the right one, someone with class like you.
I can imagine.
No, this is no gag. I mean it. Just by being here, you make this room seem, well, I don't know how to say it, something wonderful. You give it a kind of feeling, you understand? It's like I'd arrived somewhere I always wanted to go.
Maybe we can arrange that. Let's have a drink.
Oh, swell. I've got some rye here in the closet. Don't mind having it straight.
No. I can have mine with water.
If I'd known, I would have gotten something good.
This will serve its purpose. Turn on the radio. I'll pour it out.
Okay.
Want anything special?
No, just the music.
Now for a drink.
Here's yours.
Okay. Here's to a long life and a merry one.
Yes, a long life.
Well, aren't you having any? What's the matter? It's not bad stuff.
I was just thinking.
Thinking? About what?
About our first meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been wondering about that. Where did I ever see you before?
On the steps of a church.
On the steps of... Oh!
What's wrong?
Hey, that's funny. Nothing, just a pain in my stomach. Go away. What's this about you on the steps of a church?
I was getting married.
Married?
Don't you remember now?
No, I... Oh, it's the darnest thing all of a sudden, too.
No, enough of this radio.
It's burning.
Don't you remember the church, the wedding, and then right after...
Look, something's wrong. I've got to call a doctor.
No, you're not going to call a doctor.
What?
You're too late for a doctor.
Too late. What'd you do to me? I don't know you.
Yes, you know me. I'm Mrs. Nick Killeen.
Nick Killeen? I don't understand.
You don't remember Nick Killeen and the girl on the steps in her wedding dress? You don't remember that?
Well, open the door and see.
My wedding day, and you were there. You and three others.
Oh, yes. Cut me. Oh, mixed up. I was there.
Yes, what do you want?
Oh, well, I don't want to barge in, but I got some chicken soup for Joe.
Listen, get out of here quick. Make sure people see you leaving and take that jar of soup with you.
Why, what's the matter?
Do as I say. I don't want you to get into any trouble. I don't have anything against you.
You must be nuts.
All right, go on in and have a good look.
Have a good look. It's a picture of Dale Kay. Ah, the horror. The horror.
Hey, a little bit about our star tonight, Miss June Havoc. She was actually born in Vancouver, British Columbia in 1912. She kind of got her start in show business. She was a child. She was called Baby June. Now, she and her sister, Louise Havoc, called, they did a vaudeville that after their parents divorced, the kids kind of brought in the family income, their mother being kind of a stage mother. June's talent often overshadowed Louise's, which kind of surprised me because Louise's name, once she got into the show business more, was changed to Gypsy Rose Lee. Anyway, she got in with Alexander Pantages, who was building up theaters up and down the West Coast of the United States. She appeared on stage in vaudeville and in movies. Now, she couldn't speak until she was the age of three, but the films were all silent, so that part didn't matter. She would cry on camera when her mother told her the family dog had died, and she would start crying for the camera. That's what you call the ultimate horror stage mom.
Yeah. I hate to tell you, they did a lot of that with the Little Rascals, too.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah. Once they actually shot a gun off stage and made them believe they shot Pete.
Oh, no.
I think it was to get Stymie to cry, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
In December of 28, in an effort to escape from her buried mother, she eloped with Bobby Reed, a boy in vaudeville act, weeks after performing at the Jayhawk Theater in Topeka, Kansas. Now, she did a number of stage appearances, and of course, Broadway, she is Sigmund's Rumbergs, Forbidden Melody, Rodgers and Hart's Pal Joey, and Havoc and her sister continued to get demands for money and gifts from their mother until her death in 1954. Wow.
What a mooch.
Yeah.
A mooch.
Like Bill Cosby, I brought you in this world, Junior. I can take you out, you know?
That's right. My preferred method of parenting.
Over the years, 1960, she was honored with two stars on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And one was for motion picture, and the other one was for television. She was also nominated for a Tony Award for Best Play Direction of a Play, 1964, for the Marathon 33, which she wrote. So she also got into writing and, I think, producing as well. So there we go.
I just thought she had a cool name. That is a cool name, June Havoc. Yeah, that just sounds like a troublemaker.
So anyway, that's just a little bit about our star tonight from this particular episode of Mole Mystery Theater.
Yes, and let's wrap up with part two, the exciting conclusion of The Bride Wore Black.
Curtain falls on act one of tonight's Mole Mystery. Julie Killeen has been accused by her employer of killing two of the three men she believes to have murdered her husband. And from what we've seen of Mrs. Killeen so far, you might say she shows a particular knack for dealing out punishment, eh, Dad?
Well, it's funny, Mr. Barnes. Rather, it's sad. But a lot of men hand out almost the same kind of punishment to themselves every time they shave. Well, men, shaving needn't be painful. Not when you shave with Mole, the heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin. That's right. Mole is the heavier cream, the cream you need for wiry whiskers or a sensitive skin. Because Mole is heavier, it not only softens your whiskers, it stands them up straight while your razor whisks them off like a feather. With Mole, you shave faster, closer, easier, and you shave painlessly. Try it. See if you don't say, it's smooth. So smooth. It's slick. So slick. It's a smooth, smooth, slick, slick shave you get with M-O-L-L-E. Mole. The heavier brushless shaving cream for tough whiskers or a tender skin. And now back to Jeffrey Barnes and Act Two of The Bride Wore Black, starring Miss June Havoc.
Julie Killeen, a bride whose beloved was murdered on their wedding day, in blind rage has vowed to avenge him. One of her intended victims, however, has uncovered her whole plot.
That, Mrs. Killeen, was how you murdered Ken Bliss and Joe Mitchell. The first, you pushed from the terrace of Corey's apartment.
No, I didn't.
The second, you poisoned in his hotel room. Now you can see why I wanted this recorded.
Mr. Holmes, you know this is a pack of lies. You know it's not true.
On the contrary, every word of what I've said is gospel. No, don't get up. Now I'll go over what happened to Frank Moran. Don't get up. Sit there and listen. We begin in the streets. Outside Frank Moran's house in Scarsdale, a 5-year-old boy riding a tricycle is stopped by an attractive young woman.
Hey, you got in my way. You got in my way.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I found this ball. Is it your ball?
No. Mine's a high bouncer.
Oh, do you want this one? I'll give it to you.
Gee, thanks.
What's your name?
Cookie Moran.
And what's your father's name?
He's Mr. Frank Moran.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
No, but I got a grandma, though. She lives in Garrison, but she comes to stay with us.
Well, don't you ever go to Garrison to visit her?
Oh, yeah. But Dr. Bixby says I make too much noise for grandma. She's sick.
Oh, Dr. Bixby's your grandma's doctor, hmm?
Sure. He goes to see her a lot. My Aunt Ada takes care of her.
Tell me, have you started school yet?
Oh, sure. I go to kindergarten every day.
What do you do there?
We draw ducks and rabbits, and Miss Baker gave me a gold star for drawing a cow. I brought it home.
Really? Well, you run along and play now, Cookie. And don't lose the ball. Frank! Frank!
What is it, dear?
A telegram for my sister Ada. Mother's very sick. She had a stroke.
A stroke?
Dr. Bixby wants me to come to Garrison right away.
Well, you'd better go. I'll drive you to the station.
No, I'll take a cab. You stay here with Cookie and Frank. Don't let him get into any trouble while I'm gone.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Moran.
Yes?
This is Miss Baker, Cookie's kindergarten teacher.
Yes.
I've heard Mrs. Moran had to go away, and I've been worried about Cookie. You know, he's so active. I'd like to come over this evening and help you take care of him.
Well, certainly, Miss Baker, and thank you for being so thoughtful.
You're not Miss Baker. What? You're not.
What?
You're the lady on the street.
No, Cookie.
My son, that's not the way to talk.
It's nothing to be alarmed about, Mr. Moran. It's just that he's very imaginative.
What's the matter with you, Cookie? I thought you liked Miss Baker.
She isn't Miss Baker.
Let me handle him. I'm used to this. Now, Cookie, didn't I just give you a gold star the other day for drawing a cow?
Huh?
And didn't I tell you I was going to see your parents someday and tell them how good you are in school?
Did you?
You know I did.
Well, if you're Miss Baker, how come you don't look like Miss Baker?
That's because I'm not wearing my glasses. You see, Mr. Moran, there's a fine point of child psychology involved here.
Mm.
Cookie's used to seeing me in the kindergarten and not in his home.
Of course.
But now that he's getting used to me here, I think he's beginning to recognize me. aren't you, Cookie?
Yes, Miss Baker.
Yeah, that's better. Now, how would you like to show me this?
Here's a closet under the stairs. I used to hide in here when I played hide and seek. See, now I can't.
Why not?
Daddy won't let me. He says there's no air in there. Mm-hmm. Look, I'll show you. I'll crawl in. There's nothing in here, just me.
Mr. Moran!
Yes?
Come here, please.
What is it, Miss Baker? What's happened?
Well, Cookie's locked in the closet, and I can't get the door open.
Now, don't get frightened. There's nothing to it. It can't be opened from the inside, but all we have to do is unlatch it like this, and the door comes open.
Oh.
All right, Cookie, come on out.
It was dark in there. I couldn't see anything at all.
Well, you get upstairs and go to bed.
No, Daddy.
It's getting late.
I don't want to. I'm having fun.
Now, you heard me.
Well, all right, but it's still early. Good night.
Good night. Oh, that gave me a fright. He's getting locked in there.
I know.
I was afraid the door is jammed.
I don't let Cookie go in here. The door's solid oak, about 2 inches thick, and there's hardly any space at all.
Yes, it is small. How long do you suppose a person would last if he got caught in there?
Oh, I don't know. An hour or two at the most. The closet's airtight, and I don't...
Oh, my goodness.
What is something the matter?
Oh, my bracelet.
Your bracelet?
Cookie had it, and he must have left it in that closet.
Well, I'll get it. I'll just feel around here, and I'm sure I'll find it for you. Just hold the door open, will you?
Frank Moran.
What? Did you say something?
This is for Nick Killeen.
Be forgotten, Mrs. Killeen, by the widow of Frank Moran, or by that little boy.
Well, you must be out of your mind, Mr. Holmes, making these accusations against me.
I assure you, I'm entirely sane. You see, Mrs. Killeen, I've been on to you right from the beginning, from the moment you wangled an introduction to me through my publisher, from the moment you came here to work as my secretary. As a matter of fact, Mrs. Killeen, I've been waiting for you.
Waiting for me?
Yes, ever since I put it together, the connection between Bliss, Mitchell, Moran, and now Holmes. The auto ride following a drunken party, the wedding at the church, the murder.
What?
Well, what's the matter?
It's getting too warm here. This chair.
Oh, I don't think you're too warm.
I'm too close to the fire.
No. Why, your hands are ice cold. You're trembling.
Let me go. Let me up.
No, stay there. I want you to stay there in my chair.
No, I can't.
Why?
Please, oh, please let me go.
Why? Why can't you stay in that chair?
Because...
Why can't you stay near the fireplace? Tell me, why?
There's a shotgun loaded behind the zinc partition. The heat of the fire...
Yes? You said it to kill me?
Yes, I was going to kill you.
All right, Mrs. Killeen, you can get up now. You don't have to hurry. I found the gun this morning and took out the charge. I think we have enough on the recorder. Mrs. Killeen, you were wrong on 3 counts. About the gun, about the way your husband was killed, and one more thing. About me.
About you?
Yes.
What about you?
I'm not George Holmes.
Not George?
I've just been substituting for him.
Substituting? Who are you?
I'm Lieutenant Wanger, New York City Police. Mrs. Killeen, I put you under arrest for the murders of Ken Bliss, Joe Mitchell, Frank Moran, and the attempted murder of George Holmes, although I don't think we'll even bother about that.
This is Jeffrey Barnes again. In just a moment, we'll bring you Act 3 of The Bride Wore Black. Now, a word from Ron Rawson.
One thing to remember about the most common type of dandruff is that many outstanding authorities say it is not a natural condition, but actually is caused by a germ called Pityrosporum ovale. Now, the only way you can get real relief is to destroy this germ. And simply washing or brushing away loose dandruff won't do it. But double dandruff will. Yes, double dandruff really works because it gets at the cause of this dandruff and kills it. Actually kills the germ on contact. Results with double dandruff have been remarkable, even in many stubborn cases. And the thing that makes double dandruff so amazingly effective is a special ingredient. An active antiseptic that's so wonderfully efficient many hospitals use it. In double dandruff, we call it Alzam. So stop trying to combat this dandruff with ineffective methods that actually are no better than plain water. Use double dandruff and destroy the cause. Get double Dandrine tomorrow. Your money back if not satisfied.
Yes?
Mrs. Killeen out here for you, Lieutenant.
Okay, bring her in. All right, Marty, wait outside.
Yes, sir.
Sit down, won't you, Mrs. Killeen? I hope you weren't too uncomfortable last night.
Bad enough without your sarcasm.
Oh, I'm quite sincere. You see, I realize your motive in this whole series of murders. Revenge. Well, I suppose that's a motive anyone can understand, but not condone. And in this case, Mrs. Killeen, you killed three innocent men.
How can you say that? They murdered Nick. Killed him in cold blood right on the steps of the church.
They didn't kill him.
Yes, they did.
Let me reconstruct what happened on that day. The wedding was over. You came out of the church, you and Nick, your bridesmaid, the others. And suddenly a car rounded the corner at high speed, came toward the church. There was a series of sounds, like backfire. And then...
Please, get up, Nick.
You'd better come with me, Julie.
Please, Julie, you're getting blood on your dress.
Let me handle it.
No, I don't need any help. Andrea.
Yes, dear.
Did you see that car?
Yes.
Come on, Julie.
No. No, Andrea, did you get a good look?
Yes, I did.
How many men were in that car?
There were four of them, but I...
Did you see the license number?
It was Z-38-27.
I remember that. Come with me, please, Andrea. I'm going back inside the church.
Pray?
No. To make a vow. Another vow. To Nick.
And that's what happened on the steps of the church, isn't it, Mrs. Killeen?
Yes.
You made one mistake, a tragic mistake. Those men in the car, they had nothing to do with your husband's death.
They did. They killed
no.
him.
No. On that day that Bliss and Mitchell and Moran and Holmes tore past the church steps in their car, another man crouched at a window of a rooming house opposite, a gun in his hand, waiting for Nick Killeen. He raised his gun as you came out on the steps. As the car streaked by, its exhaust backfiring, he shot.
Who was it?
Just a moment.
Yes, Lieutenant?
Bring him in.
Okay, sir.
It was a former partner of Nick's. A man who worked the rackets with him. A man who couldn't let Nick go straight.
Oh, stop torturing me. Who was it?
Good morning.
Oh, no. Can't be.
How do you do, Mrs. Killeen?
Corey.
Yeah, when you came to my party, I thought I recognized you from a picture Nick showed me once.
And I sent you away so I could kill Bliss.
Yeah. Wasn't it too bad you didn't know who I was? Too bad Nick wouldn't introduce you to his partner. He didn't even trust me to meet you. And now look at the mess you're in.
You're on a spot yourself, Corey.
Sure, I know that. You know,
yes.
Wouldn't it be something if me and her were hung the same day?
And now this is Jeffrey Barnes again, inviting you to join us next week when we present a great tale from the pen of Vincent Starrett entitled The 11th Juror, which will star Sidney Blackmer, popular star of stage and screen.
Maybe you haven't thought about it, but when you're too tired, you often get depressed, apprehensive. You have two strikes on you from the start. Now, if you're often that tired and pale besides, your doctor may find you have a borderline anemia resulting from a ferronutritional blood deficiency. In that case, take iodized yeast tablets. They help build up your strength by building up your red blood cells. So take iodized yeast tablets to help get back your energy, your enthusiasm, your healthy color. Ask for iodized yeast tablets.
The original music for the Mystery Theater is composed and conducted by Alexander Semler. Any similarity between the names and characters used on this show and any actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. Tonight's play was adapted for radio by Paul Monash. This is Dan Seymour saying goodnight until next Friday at this same time
when the Mystery Theater presents The 11th Juror.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
And this is Eerie House.
There you go.
House. All right, the Eerie House Broadcasting Network brings you not only great radio, but great morals. Eerie House Radio proudly presents a garless story with moral with gar, but not.
Throw apologies to Gar because this is Gar's. The only contractual agreement possibly longer than a marriage vow is the life insurance. There you go. And that's and that's only slightly longer, the life insurance. I don't think she'll be collecting life insurance, though, you know. When you do a triple murder and attempted another one, I don't think that she'll be collecting any of the life insurance on that policy.
No. And that was a cool story in that you didn't often have female villains of that magnitude, you know, where they were like pretty much turned into cold-blooded killers.
Yeah, and she did, and she was ready to do it again, you know, had she not and she was kind of ingenious. I mean, that last one, a shotgun in place until the fireplace heated it up enough to shoot him through the head there while he was sitting in his chair.
Yeah.
So, quite ingenious.
A gal after my own heart. or maybe my head. I don't know.
There you go. Yeah. You're right. And, you know, so few of these shows, just like in the movies of the day, really didn't feature the women as the main character, let alone the main protagonist. And it worked out well in this episode. Yeah, great. Well, you know, there's no scorn like a rap like a woman scorned, you know, so
yeah.
She was getting hers.
A vengeful bride who wore black and tried dishing it out and ended up heading off to prison.
Yeah, well, heading off to more than that, I'm sure. Like the guy said, maybe we'll hang on the same day or something like that. Yeah.
Yep. Or do the electric slide in the little special chair.
And that was a new product I didn't recall hearing before, that Dandrine for your dandruff. Because otherwise, the other stuff was no better than water. So use Dandrine.
Or Elmer's glue.
Well,
keeps that dandruff in place.
It does. Or that good old dippity do. That'll keep everything in place too.
Oh yeah. God, dippity do. Oh, slime in a jar.
I have to tell you, my mother used that. I mean, I had this stubborn rooster tail. She said it wouldn't look right if I cut it off. So she'd take dippity do, put it on my head, then she'd mix it in with water. And when I headed to school, my whole head was completely stiff because the dippity doo dried with the water, and you know, you could probably take a hammer to me and I wouldn't feel it.
That damn Aquanet was like that whenever we went to like over a relative's house or to a wedding or something. They spray this crap after they got done combing my hair. They sprayed this nightmare stuff, and you felt like you had a brick on your head.
Well, you know, that's okay. You can get away with it there, but try going to school and getting away with it. Boy, did I get teased with that one. Yep. And I never really had that dandruff problem, but that's because it couldn't escape the dippity-doo.
That's right. Dippity-doo. Nothing gets past.
Dippity-doo.
Probably was flammable.
Yeah, it was. I wouldn't be a bit surprised if it was, but it would be, but WD2 would have been more like a candle.
No, Aquanet was like a flamethrower. We used to have wars. You take a match and.
See, it was,
stupid.
See, it was good for stuff. It was good for something, like losing your hand, but.
That.
Hey, speaking of that, we haven't had it for a while, so maybe I could reach into my pocket here and hand you a nickel for the commercial jukebox, Dale.
Sure, slide it into the old jukebox and let's see what comes up.
Okay, here it goes.
Here is something you should know if you ever suffer from the sudden pain of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia. It is a way to ease the pain, often within a few minutes. A way that is incredibly fast and effective. It's Anacin. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven, active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people were first introduced to Anacin through their own physicians or dentists. But today, it is in such a widespread use that all drug counters have it, and anyone may enjoy its benefits. Next time you suffer from the pains of a headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, by all means, try Anacin. You'll like the convenience of Anacin tablets, and you'll be delighted with Anacin's incredibly fast action. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Anacin, Anacin. Ask for it today at your druggist.
Yeah, I think it's still around, too, Anacin.
I think it is, yeah. I believe you're right. I thought it was gone, and then I noticed it it was a grocery store in with their other aspirin. You think, you know, because again, you don't hear it as much, but you know how Bayer used to call itself the Wonder Drug. But
Wonder Drug.
The Wonder Drug.
Well, let's get moving over to our
I always thought that was marijuana, but okay. Talk of that and you're wondering what you're doing there.
Yeah. The Wonder Drug. I wonder what I was doing. I know what we were doing. We were going to play a second radio show. This one's from Michael Shane.
Right, a little bit of history. I was just going to say a little bit of history on the whole Michael Shane thing. In 39, Miami-based private detective Michael Shane was first published in paperback by David Davis Dressler, but he wrote under the name of Brett Halliday. And it quickly became sensational. Hard-boiled private eye that would appear in 77 novels and 300 short stories. From the 1930s through the 1970s. Now, he quickly made his leap into films. I know you mentioned this before, Dale, the Lloyd Nolan playing Shane in 7 well-made B films, 1940 to 1942. And those, I think, are pretty much available on YouTube if you want to check those out. There's another film series that was made 46 and 47 from good old PRC Poverty Row Films starring, yep, that's right, Dad Beaver, Hugh Beaumont. Shane also went on to radio. The first series aired over the West Coast Mutual Network as Michael Shane, private detective, starred Wally Mayer as the lead. It also had it as his assistant, Kathy Lewis. So you hear her name so much in suspenses. And, of course, she was also co-starred on the My Friend Irma. And she also, in the television version, she was Molly McGee in Fib McGee and Molly. Anyway, the second radio feature starred Jeff Chandler, was produced by Bill Russo. And in contrast to radio series, The New Adventures of Michael Shane was the most hard-boiled radio detective series produced during the golden age of radio. It was set in the mysterious city of New Orleans. And again, a lot of the original Michael Shanes were in Miami. Series was syndicated from the mid-1940s and for decades afterwards. Now, the final Michael Shane radio series was The Adventures of Michael Shane, aired from 52 to 53 over ABC, managed to have 3 different leads in its first 14 weeks. But it was set back in Miami again. Michael Shane made its way to television much later in the late 50s, an episode of TV anthology series Decision. Mark Stevens, who, of course, was cool detective Peter Gunn, he starred in an episode, was repackaged as a pilot for a TV series that was never made. Then in 1960, the series was produced with a former Mr. and Mrs. North star, Richard Denning. He's starring as the lead. It was a well-made detective series, but unfortunately, it aired in an era where it was a wash of great detective shows and wasn't exactly faithful to the books. That fact of many Michael Shane novels of the era poked fun of it. And there are a few of those on YouTube as well. In addition, Michael Shane had a comic book tied to the TV show. So, there you go. Like many characters of the era, Michael Shane went through a wide variety of iterations to please the various audiences, from the tough Private Eye books to the new adventures to a lighter approach with Lloyd Nolan and Wally Mayer to the typical early 60s played by Denning. There are also many interpretations of characters, yet to those who know the name Michael Shane, still remember the for quality detective fiction, regardless of the iteration.
Yep. And today's story is no different. Let's
Absolutely.
Get started with the case of the Haunted Bride. Hunted Bride? Haunted Bride.
Either way, it works. I've been listening to it a couple times, and either way, it works.
A haunted bride.
It's from July 22nd, 1948.
A dozen bullets smashed through the wind. I just held my breath and said a few appropriate words to any archangels that might be listening. I felt something bite into my neck. I thought, so long, Mike. It's been fun.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to another transcribed episode with Michael Shane. That reckless, red-headed Irishman back at his old haunts in New Orleans. We call it The Case of the Hunted Bride.
Michael Shane, the private detective.
Yeah, you have a chair. I'll be finished shaving in a second.
Thank you. You always shave in your office?
Yeah, usually. That's good enough. You know, it's what do you think about this razor? For years, it hummed Jeannie with the light brown hair. The last couple of days, just can't seem to carry a tune.
I had no intention of seeing you when I came to New Orleans. I just wanted to see the city again. Perhaps to capture some of the pleasant memories. You see, I grew up here.
That's so?
Yes. And I wanted to see it just once more, before I die.
Which should be sometime around 1990.
Which will be tonight.
What's wrong with waiting till 1990?
It's my husband, George.
Yeah, it usually is.
No, you don't understand, Mr. Shane. I love George. He's my whole life.
Well, then why end it?
Knowing what I do, I can't go on. I don't want to live. Yet, what if I'm wrong? What if none of it is true? I want you to find out the truth.
Just what do you think is the truth, dear lady?
That my husband, George, is a murderer.
In a moment, we'll return to Mike Shane and the case of the Hunted Bride.
Her name was Grace Morrison, Mrs. George Morrison, to be exact. She lived in the capital city of a neighboring state, and she was so madly in love with her husband, she was about to drop dead. If that's that love they write those beautiful songs about, I'll stick to my electric razor. Anyway, I told her to go back home, and I'd take a run up and see her as soon as I cleared up a few things around the office, and that we'd soon find out whether her husband was a murderer or not. In either case, I was to get my usual $20 a day. Lovable little me. As it turned out, I didn't arrive in her city until early the next evening. I registered in a little hotel, and then I telephoned her. Phone seemed to ring forever. And just when I was about to hang up... Hello? Mrs. Morrison? Hello? Hey. Hey, what's wrong? Hey, Mrs. Morrison? Hello? Hello? 20 minutes later, a taxi let me out in front of a small bungalow. A guy was standing on the front porch, fumbling in his coat pocket. He heard me coming and spun around.
What do you want?
Morrisons live here.
What did they do?
I just talked to Mrs. Morrison on the phone. She sounded like she was in trouble.
What is this, another one of their tricks?
Whose tricks? Come on, get this door open.
I'm warning you, if you try anything...
You may be dying in there. Will you open this door?
Dying?
Step on it. Hey, what are you shaking for?
Well, I...
Here, give me that key.
They've done anything to Grace. Grace! Grace, where are you?
Wait! Dad! We found her on the floor in the hall with the telephone receiver still in her hand. The guy who turned out to be her husband carried her to a couch. I headed for the gas heater, shut off the gas, and started opening windows. When I got back to the living room, Grace was coming out of the fog.
You're going to be all right, sweetheart. You're going to be okay.
You better call a doctor, Mr. Morrison.
She looks okay.
Call a doctor.
But
what?
If we can work it without a doctor...
What's the matter? Don't you trust anybody?
Look, mister, I don't know who
now
you
are...
Let's
not start that again. See if you got any spiritual ammonia in the house.
I think we have.
All right, put a spoonful in a glass of water and make it snappy.
All right. I'll get it right away.
Hey, Morrison, don't close the front door. We need air in here.
There's plenty of air coming through the windows. I'll get the medicine now.
Friendliest man in town.
George. Huh. George.
Parties.
Wasn't you. George. Couldn't have been you. Huh. George.
You just take it easy, Mr. Morrison.
Mr. Shane.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of foolish, sweetheart.
What do you mean?
I'm the old-fashioned type. In my book, turning on the gas is foolish.
But I didn't turn on the gas.
What?
No. I guess I dozed off. The phone woke me up and the house was full of gas. I didn't realize how bad until I answered the phone and everything started blacking out.
And who did turn on the gas?
I don't know.
You think it was your husband, don't you?
I don't know.
Well, I don't think so. Not the way he acted when he came in here.
Mr. Shane, I don't know what to think anymore.
What makes you believe he's killed anybody?
I'll talk to you later.
No, while he's still upstairs.
No, Mr. Shane.
Come on.
The telegrams. That's what started it.
Telegrams?
The first one came 6 months ago. George had been out of work for so long, and he was desperate. As soon as he got the telegram, he went away without saying a word. Came back 2 days later with $250.
Well, that doesn't mean anything. He
wasn't the same, George. He began having terrible nightmares. He'd wake up screaming he didn't want to kill. And that's not all that happened. Someone's trying...
Wait, he's coming back.
How are you feeling now, Grace?
Better, George. I don't know what happened, George.
It's okay. Okay, we'll talk about it later. Here, take a drink of this. They've done this.
Who's they, Morrison?
Huh? Oh, nothing. Come on, Grace. I'll take care of you.
He carried her upstairs, and the way they looked at each other, I wanted to whip out a violin and play gypsy music. What was going on here? Well, I lit a cigarette and wandered through the house, trying to make sense out of what Grace had told me. Trying to understand how that fitted in with the hem-stitched God Bless Our Happy Home that hung over the sofa. Then the phone started ringing. Hello?
So you got home in time to save your wife. All righty, we'll try again.
What?
How does it feel wondering when it's going to happen? Wondering if it's going to be you or your wife? Joe Blake didn't have to wonder, did he?
Joe Blake?
Wait a minute. Who is this?
This is Mike Shane. Now, hello? Hello?
Put the phone down, Shane.
Yeah, but look.
I said put the phone down.
Sure. Some woman. She sounded like...
I know how she sounded.
Hey, who's Joe Blake?
It's getting late, Shane.
You're so subtle, Mr. Morrison. Who's Joe Blake?
Good night, Mr. Shane.
Before I go, can I ask you one final question, Mr. Morrison?
Well?
Who's Joe Blake? Ask a silly question, you get a silly answer. I heard the lock click behind me, and the lights went out inside the house. It was a cold, black night. A couple of blocks away, I saw a lighted street, and I heard a streetcar. I started walking toward it, and then I stopped. Not a sound. The sound was light. Might even have been a twig falling, only twigs don't wear shoes. The sound of the streetcar was louder now, but so were the footsteps. I'm a nervous guy. I put a cigarette in my mouth and struck a match, giving him a chance to pass me. I flicked the match away and watched it make an arc of flame. Before it could complete the arc, a bigger flame exploded in my head. No! I don't know how long it lasted. It was like spending the summer in a cement mixer. The pain didn't mean anything after a while, and I stopped trying to crawl away.
All right, Ralph, that's enough. I said that's enough!
Suddenly, everything stopped. Then I heard a nice, friendly sound. A gun getting ready for action.
Turn the flash on him, Ralph.
You can see him all right, Ruthie.
I want to see him better than all right. I want to watch his face when he gets it.
Ruthie, somebody might see us. Go on, get it over with.
I said turn the flash on him.
All right, all right.
I had the lights on Joey when he died.
All right, now you got your light. Hey, wait.
Huh?
This guy ain't Morrison.
No. No, he isn't.
How do you like that? Now, punk! Oh! Punk! Oh!
I guess eventually Ralph's foot started hurting him. Anyhow, he stopped kicking, and they left. For a long time, I lay there, snuggling up to a couple of rusty garbage cans. A moth-eaten tomcat came up and stared at me for a long time, but he figured I was too big to eat, so he moved on, too. Outside of that, I was left all to myself, at peace among the melon rinds. It wasn't all wasted, though. I was beginning to fit things together. It sure looked now like husband George had killed Joe Blake. Finally, I was able to get to my feet and find a taxi and get back to my hotel. As I walked through the lobby of my hotel, somebody climbed out of an overstuffed chair and started toward me. It was George Morrison.
I've been waiting for you, Shane.
Oh, that's too bad.
What happened to your face?
I ran into some friends of yours, Morrison.
I want to see you upstairs.
I hope that's your first aid kit you're holding in your pocket.
Upstairs, Shane.
What do you want?
Grace finally admitted what you really were, Shane.
Oh, people have been calling me that for years.
We don't need any private detectives around here. Start packing. You're going back to New Orleans.
But I just got here.
Start packing.
Suppose I don't.
You'll find out you were wrong about what I got in my pocket.
Okay. Yeah, this suitcase sure gets a beating.
The train leaving here at midnight. I've already made your reservation.
Well, that's mighty friendly of...
What's the matter?
Someone on the fire escape. Take a dive. Now! I took a dive to the floor myself, knocking over the lamp and plunging the room into darkness. Half a dozen bullets smashed through the window. I just held my breath and said a few appropriate words to any archangels who might be listening. I felt the splinter of glass bite into my neck. I thought, so long, Mike. It's been fun.
We'll return to Mike Shane and the case of the hunted bride.
We will return to the case of the hunted bride eventually.
Yes. A quick bit about Jeff Chandler. We talked a little bit about him. 1918 through 1961, after World War II. And an injury from a car accident that temporarily marred his good looks, Chandler became a radio actor, known for his starring roles in Michael Shane and Frontier Town, before landing the role as the bashful biologist Mr. Boynton on R. Miss Brooks. Chandler was vaulted to stardom with his performance as Cochise in Broken Arrow. He also received an Oscar nomination for that performance. and would spend much of the 1950s and much sought after as a popular actor, as well as a producer, and get this, a singer. Boy, he'd have a heck of a, if he could sing with using that voice of his, that would probably be pretty amazing to hear. Never heard his sing.
Nope. I guess he was never the big cheese. He was just co-cheese.
Yeah, that's right. But a lot of guys did sing. Raymond Burr kind of started off his career as a singer. So, and that's the last thing you think of Raymond Burr when you think of.
Oh,
I mean, you think of like a smorgasbord when you think of Raymond Burr, but. Shame on me. I know.
Ironside's greatest hits.
Yep, there you go. Yep.
We got a pretty good story here, though. He does. Now this character, to me, the way Chandler's playing him tonight, is a little reminiscent of the Lloyd Nolan adaptation I have seen recently, which I thoroughly enjoyed in the movie version.
Yeah. I think Lloyd played it a little bit lighter, but it was still just as hard and tough. But yeah, this murder's all over the place with this one, I'm telling you.
Well, that's always nice.
I guess the confusion with the name of this episode comes up that on the radio program itself, it says The Hunted Bride, but everywhere over the internet, they call it The Haunted Bride. So that's the confusion.
Well, I heard in the introduction, they clearly said hunted, so you actually have it correct, Dave.
So... But the internet is wrong. What? That can't be. The internet never lies.
The world is flying out of its orbit. Run for your lives. But we're going to hold steady and hold fast and wrap up our episode of Michael Shane, Case of the Hunted Bride. We'll be back.
Life was getting complicated again. Here I leave the peace and quiet of New Orleans to come to this town because Grace Morrison had decided her husband George was a murderer. And everything that had happened since my arrival had convinced me that the lady was so right. Now I was nibbling the rug on my hotel room floor while someone on the fire escape kept pumping bullets through the glass at George and me. Finally, I realized that the shooting had stopped. Then I heard footsteps down the fire escape. I raced to the window just as some guy reached the yard below. At the edge of the yard, a girl huddled against a fence, trying to keep out of range of the street lamp. It was wasting her time, though. Even from where I stood, I recognized her as Ruthie, the little sweetheart I'd met in the alley earlier in the evening. As I watched, the guy on the fire escape joined her. He turned out to be Ralph, the happy-go-lucky chap who'd tried to dropkick my head into the Gulf of Mexico. They hurried away. Then I remembered George Morrison.
Oh.
What's the matter with you? Yeah, let me get the light on. Where are you hit, Morrison?
In the shoulder.
Yeah, let go of the gun. What a good it did you.
I didn't get a chance.
A time killer like you, it doesn't look too good.
What are you going to do?
Call the doctor.
No.
What have you got against doctors? You know, some of those guys are pretty talented.
Shane, put the phone down, please.
Operator. Operator.
Shane, I beg you. I don't care about myself, but for my wife's sake.
What do you mean?
We get a doctor, he'll have to report it to the police. Everything will come out in the open.
You know, I think I'd like that.
Well, Grace wouldn't understand. Never be the same with us again. Now, please, Shane, give me a break. It's been tough enough.
Why are those two gunners trying to kill you?
Because they don't understand. Because they're blaming me for something I couldn't help.
The killing Joe Blake. Did you kill him?
Shane, you don't understand.
Just answer me.
Now, listen, you...
Answer me. Did you kill Joe Blake?
Yes, but you... Shane.
Who's there?
Detective, Mr. Shane.
Shane, if you'll let me explain, you'll understand everything.
All right. Stay here in the bedroom.
Well? What is it?
Some of the guests report hearing shots. They say they think they came from your suite, Mr. Shane.
My suite? Well, man, I was just taking a nap.
Nice mattresses you got in this hotel.
You didn't hear any shots?
When I sleep, I don't hear nothing.
Now, how come you heard my knock?
Yeah.
That's right. You know, science has a lot of things to explain.
Shots didn't come from your bedroom.
No.
Well, all right. Sorry to have disturbed you, Mr. Shane.
Oh, it's okay, officer. Well, come around any time at all.
Okay, now, George, start to... Hey, George. There wasn't any George. There was only a little trail of blood leading to the window. For the second time that night, somebody clattering down the fire escape. Leave it to a house stick to knock on the right door at the wrong time. After that, I did the only intelligent thing I had done all day. I went to sleep. Early the next morning, I called Grace Morrison. She told me that George had come home late with his arm all banged up. Said he'd bumped into something. Then I went over to the police department. Being as coy as possible, I tried to find out if the cops were looking for George Morrison or a reasonable facsimile. They weren't. I went to the public library and got out all the old newspaper files. You know, I didn't find Morrison's name, but Joe Blake's name was scattered through the crime news like confetti. A cheap little hoodlum who'd done everything in the books. One picture showed him and Ruthie smiling at each other across a nightclub table. Ruthie looked better in those days. The last item said Joe was being sought in connection with a gangland murder. That was 6 months ago. There were no more papers. The librarian told me the other issues hadn't been bound yet, but she'd get them for me. I couldn't wait. Something was clicking in my brain. I left the library and headed for the corner drugstore. I found a phone booth. Dialed the Times Express. I know a guy on the crime beat. Pete? Yeah, hiya, kid. Long time no see. Oh, it's Mike Shane. Yeah. Hey, Pete, can you give me a little information? Yeah. Ever hear of a guy named Joe Blake? Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. Oh, tell me, what finally happened to Joe? There comes the dawn. And the guy who pulled it? Yeah, I know it's supposed to be confidential, but... was his name George Morrison? Yeah. Hey, Pete, tell me something, will you? Where do I go to donate my head to the fat drive? I'll explain later. Now, right now, I gotta make another call, quick. Shame, you know, we're passing out brains. You must have been out to lunch. Just a minute, Mac. I'll be right out. Hey, will you stop pounding up? Oh. I looked out to see who was making like a woodpecker on the glass, and I found myself looking into the little pink eyes of Ruthie's friend, Ralph. He motioned me to come out of the booth. Well, at the moment, there wasn't any place else to go.
Come on, Mr. Shane.
Sure, but where?
Back to your hotel room.
Why?
You got company.
Not interested.
Get interested real fast. I got a gun right on your spine.
So we went back to my hotel room. He waited in the hallway till I unlocked the door and closed it behind me. Then I heard him going back down the hall. I stood for a moment in the darkness. Then I saw the glowing cigarette. I snapped on the light. It was Ruthie making herself very comfortable on the sofa. She sat up, smoothing her dress down with one hand and holding a gun in the other.
Nice couch.
Nice room. Mine.
I know. That's why I came.
I'm only paying for a single. They'll have to raise the rent.
Would you mind?
Yeah. You see, I can never be myself with a girl when she's holding a gun.
I want you to do something for me, Michael.
Sure. Coax me, Ruthie.
Get on the phone. I'm going to give you a number to call.
Swell. If a man answers, I'll hang up, huh?
I want you to call Brighton 4506.
Brighton 45. That's George Morrison's number.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I want to, Ruthie, honey.
It's a shame, Michael. And I'm going to have to kill you. Go on, get on that phone. Brighton 4506.
Yeah.
Operator?
Brighton 4506.
4506, thank you.
What do you want me to say?
I want you to tell George Morrison to come over and see you right away. Tell him it's very urgent.
As the phone rang, I glanced out the window.
Down on the sidewalk, I saw Ralph leaning against a lamppost and reading a paper. I guess it was then that the idea came to me. It wasn't great, but so what? I had about as much chance as a guy buying a ticket on the Irish sweepstakes, only if I lost, I couldn't just tear up the ticket and try again next year.
Hello?
Oh, hello, Grace. This is Mike Shane.
Oh, Mr. Shane, I'm so glad you called.
I'd like to speak to your husband, George.
He's on his way over to see you at the hotel. I don't know what for.
What?
Yes, he...
Oh, fine.
Well?
You're in luck, Ruthie. Morrison's on his way over here now.
Isn't that nice, Mike?
You must have gone for Joe Blake in a big way.
We were so right for each other, Joe and I. When that happens, you don't want to lose it. Where are you going?
Open this window. It's stuffy in here.
Sit down. You're getting nervous, Mike.
Me fresh out of bromance.
I said sit down.
But I didn't sit down right away. Now the plan had to work. There was nothing else. I looked down at Ralph again. While I watched, he looked up. I sat down on the windowsill, lit a cigarette. Ruth was thinking about Joe Blake. You could tell it by looking at her eyes or lips. She didn't even notice me. I signaled to Ralph with my head for him to come up. He dropped the newspaper and looked confused, but he didn't move. Now, the plan was no good. I started walking again.
I told you, sit down, Mike.
Okay, Ruthie, but I've seen it work in a lot of bad pictures.
What are you talking about?
Nothing, nothing.
You get it.
Okay. Yeah?
Let me talk to Ruth.
Oh, you better tell her that yourself.
Huh? I told you.
Hello?
Me...
Hello.
What's going on up there? I'm coming up.
He hung up.
Who was that?
It was your friend Ralph.
What did he say?
George Morrison just came into the lobby. He's on his way upstairs.
All right. Sit down on that chair.
Funny about love, isn't it, Ruthie? When it's right, you're singing in the rain. When it's wrong...
There was nothing wrong with Joe and me. The only good thing that ever happened to me. Morrison had to destroy it.
It wasn't Morrison. He just did what he was told.
Did what he was told?
Ruth, there's only a few seconds left. This is the last chance you're ever going to have in all this world. Give me that gun.
No. Open the door for Morrison and then duck.
No.
Hurry up.
Suppose it's your boy, Ralph.
Are you kidding? Open that door, Shane, or you'll never open another one.
No, Ruthie.
All right, Mike.
In a moment, we'll be back with a thrilling climax to tonight's Michael Shane adventure.
The first shot, I ducked fast. Then I realized that she wasn't shooting at me. She was shooting through the door. And even before the smoke cleared away, a trickle of red began slipping in from under the door like a calling card. Started to the door, chuckling to herself, like she'd suddenly gotten the tagline of a joke that had been bothering her for weeks. Then she opened the door, saw her pal Ralphie crumpled in the hall. She stopped laughing. She stood in the doorway, her head thrown back like she was going to sing grand opera. Only all that came out was one piercing, crazy scream. Yeah, it was all over. All the way around. I called Grace Morrison from the railroad station. I only had a couple of minutes, so I told it to her fast. I guess a little too fast.
But I don't understand, Mr. Shane. You say I was wrong about George?
Yeah, completely wrong.
Those telegrams. His nightmare. Those people who tried to kill him.
Well, I haven't time to tell you everything, Mrs. Morrison. Just take my word for it. Those jobs he's been going on, they're so legal, it hurts. You know, sometimes I think a lot of marriages would be better off if they changed that love, honor, and obey routine to just love, honor, and trust. You know what I mean, Grace? Yeah. That's just about the whole story. Except for one little footnote printed in small type and strictly between us boys. What I told Grace was partly the truth. Those jobs George Morrison goes on are perfectly legal. But her one big fear is absolutely correct. Every time George gets one of those telegrams, he does kill a man. Just as he killed Joe Blake. Still, if George doesn't want her to know, well, then I guess that's his business. Because, you see, George Morrison is the official state prison executioner. Yeah, the guy who pulls the switch.
Michael Shane is written for radio by Larry Marcus, from characters created by Brett Halliday. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. The Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood, and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild. Next week, you'll hear Michael Shane in another suspense thriller. It's a story you'll long remember, and one I will never forget.
Yes, he truly was a killer, but legal.
True. Yep. That's
So that was the twist at the end. That was kind of cool.
And I like it because he never releases that twist until the end. I know that we did about the guy that didn't die, and actually when he finally busted in the room, it was an empty room. It was just the family that kept that threat of that Anthony Carell alive the whole time, that scared everybody into doing what the family wanted. So, you know, but it never happened until the very end when he bust open that door. And that's what's so good about these new adventures of Michael Shane. That tremendous writing, absolutely tremendous writing.
Yep, this was a darn good one. We got 5 bride stories in this weekend. That's amazing. Next weekend, we're going to get a little revenge.
We are, but shouldn't we have a little lesson from the story first?
Yes, let us not get ahead of ourselves talking about next week just yet. Let us learn something. Like when to start the intro music. Erie House Radio probably resents a garless moral of the story with Gar, sort of, kind of.
I guess what's yours?
Oh. Would have been yours? Nice to have been prepared then.
Okay, well, in that case, I can take it. With no apologies to Gar, because this is his. Love and trust are some of the strongest bonds that, when broken, are the most difficult to make as they once were. There we go.
Oh, boy, that doesn't even deserve a sound effect, because that is so profound and true.
It is, and very apropos to this episode as well.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yep.
But, again, getting into next week, we are going to get some revenge, are we not?
We are. Yes. With some lights out, weird circle returns again, suspense, haunting hour, and this strange little program called WCRS Radio Stage. Ooh, that not only gives us revenge, but breaks us into our Christmas programming at the very end of our weekend next weekend.
Yeah, this is going to be a really good radio stage. Dave was telling me a bit about that, and it's your largest role with the most lines.
This is the largest role I gave myself. I get to be the bad guy in here, and this is the largest role in the about 30 programs I produced of half-hour radio stages. This is the biggest role I ever gave myself. So.
And I'll tell you what, that has to be fun playing a heavy. Let's see what you do with it. Next week, that'll be a week from tonight, because that'll be our closeout show on Saturday. Friday at 8:30, it's lights out and suspense and more.
And a weird circle. Those three tomorrow, next Friday night. Yeah.
So join us or else don't.
Or join us in the archive. But yes. It's fun to have everybody here in the chat, just like we had them here tonight with Foxbane, GGSI Paper, and so many of the others that were here a little earlier, Edrica, Hyper Sloth, and even our good friend Gar the Ghoul, who hopefully will be with us for next Friday's shows.
Yeah, he's going to be doing his show very shortly in about, less than 40 seconds. And then tonight, the Vortex, you've got to see Spaceship One.
Yeah,
that's at 11.
11 o'clock, horrorhost.net. We will be there. Hopefully we'll see you guys there, too. I know it's late, but baby, it's cold outside, so stay in.
Time for me to start guzzling coffee.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
There we go. That was fine.
There you go.
That was fine.
Yeah, it came out okay. We had again, as always, we try to do a little fact, a little fun, and a whole lot of old-time radio. There you go.
Yes, we do.
Dale, I really like these Michael Shanes. I heard several of them before. I get to hear all of them now. But
so you're saying there were seven movies with Lloyd Nolan?
Seven movies with Lloyd Nolan now. And there are a number of those.
Because I've only seen one of them.
Let me see. I know I'm in here.
I remember Mantan Moreland was in it, but I believe he was in a few of those.
Anything he's in has got to be great.
Yeah.
And Michael Sheen. Yeah, looking at this real quick. Come on. Do it, buddy. Search it. What's your problem here?
I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, well, let's do it this other way then. Copy. Go in here. YouTube. You can catch several of the Richard Jennings. Those were kind of interesting too. I've shown a couple of those on the TV Time War series. Oh, come on. Get in here with videos. Come on, you could do this. Let's see. Okay. The ones that I see that are on YouTube, there's 1940, Michael Shane, investigator, private film. I don't know what that is. Okay. The Man Who Wouldn't Die, 1942.
Right.
Behind the News, 1941. Michael Shane on Screen. It doesn't say when that one is.
Time to Kill, 1942. Is that the?
I'm just looking at the three I see at least off the top here are The Man Who Wouldn't Die, The Behind the News, and Michael Shane on Screen. But Behind the News, wait a minute, that was only 14 minutes. Man Who Wouldn't Die is a full episode. It looks like this. Michael Shane on Screen almost looks like a documentary, but so it's hard to tell exactly what is going on. Oh, here is let's say which one this is. Michael Shane Private. Oh, the first one, Michael Shane Private Detective. That's also there. So
go.
Yeah, on the internet, there's quite a few of them around. So.
I will have to check them out. I enjoyed the one I saw. It had good film noir, hard-boiled detective stuff, and some good comic relief with Moreland Mantan.
Yeah.
Or is it Mantan Moreland?
Mantan Moreland. But you know what? There's no way you can go wrong with that.
No way
you can go wrong with that. Mantan, he is just such a classic. Classic guy that, you know.
Yeah. I think he was paired up with someone. Didn't he have a little partnership for a while, a comedy partnership with someone?
I think early in his career. Jackie Darrow.
Yeah.
He did quite a few with him. And, of course, he was in several of the, a number of the Charlie Chan movies towards the end.
Yep. Very versatile.
Yeah.
Got around a bit.
All right. Wow. But his shows are always, he always gets beat up or shot at or kicked or slugged in the head. But, you know, he always comes out of it and always gets his man.
That is the way to do it. And we should probably
move into Gar's show over on iVlog and check up with a horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul on Facebook. That'll give you the direct link, and we'll see everyone back here next Friday at 8:30 p.m. for some revenge. But until then, we have Jimmy to say goodnight.
Good night, folks.
Good night. Good night. It's time to say good night. Good night. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same. And it could think it do. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Paper.